You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Wisconsin has announced its Teachers of the Year, and for the first time, someone from one of the state's First Nations received the award. We'll talk with him about his work to keep Menominee arts and language alive. But first, if you grew up long enough ago, this theme song will sound familiar. It's the Jetsons. That whooshing, trilling sound you heard is the family of the future traveling in their flying car. Their car isn't unique, it's commonplace in their world. Beyond the Jetsons, many TV shows and films have had fabulous visions of the future. But a lot of the technology they promised, like warp speed, flying cars, or time machines, never really came to be. So what happened? Where are our jetpacks? Our next guest recently took a look at some of the technology we wanted but never got and why many of these inventions are still, maybe, light years away. Bill Andrews is a senior associate editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. He wrote the cover story for their June issue titled Whatever Happened to the Future. Bill, welcome to the welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you very much. It's good to be back.
What made you want to take a look at this technology that still hasn't quite come to pass?
I guess the time was right. I guess that's the joke answer. Really, it's an idea that I always kind of toy with in my head, just in my daily life. When I'm outside and it rains on me, I just think to myself, really? Rain? It's still going to rain on me? It's 2018. What's happening here? Or when I'm appreciating cool technology, I pick up my smartphone to answer a bar bet or whatever, and instantly we have the answer at our fingertips. I think, that's cool. We got that one. We figured that one out. Why can't we figure out some of these other kind of emblematic ideas of the future, like you said, flying cars or time machines or some of these other ideas?
Let's start.
So, yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so we just figured, well, let's take a look and see, are we close to figuring those out? Do we have any more surprises in store with us for any of those, or how are we doing?
Now, you broke down a few different ones, and you looked at, you know, where some of these ideas appeared and where we are on them. Let's start with jetpacks. Now, these were big, right, for a long time in our popular science fiction.
Oh, sure. I mean, the quintessential idea for me is still The Rocketeer, the movie that was some semi-beloved, perhaps. I liked it, based on the comic books before that. And the Jetsons also had their own jetpacks. The Jetsons kind of showed up a lot in this story, as it turned out. They really played a formative role in what we think of as the future, I think. But, jetpacks are one of those things that you think, well, in the future, everything's going to be better, cooler, faster. I got to be able to get around somehow, and things will be crowded. Cars are polluting. They take up a lot of space, a lot of energy. Why not just zip around in my jetpack? It seems so easy.
And there are, in existence, things that we could look at and say, yeah, that's a jetpack, right?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of start out with the lame examples. I mean, astronauts are using a type of jetpack right now. They've been doing it for decades in space to get around in the zero-G, you know, environment that they have. And over water, we have kind of hydro jetpacks that use water instead of gas as their propellant. So you can kind of do these cool loop-de-loops and swirls and fly around over the surface of the water. But that's still not really the jetpacks that we think of that can go over land, that can take you wherever you want to go. And even though there have been some prototypes over the years that have worked temporarily for individuals, to jet around, there was a company that went around the Statue of Liberty famously as a kind of a PR stunt. It's not like any of those have gotten really widespread commercial success. You can't go out to Walmart and buy yourself a jetpack, sadly.
And you are right that there's a Flyboard Air jetpack for your feet. I guess you wear it on your feet, kind of like Iron Man. They aren't selling it yet is one drawback, and they're offering you a 10-minute flight on it. It would cost $250,000. So I see some downsides there.
Yeah, exactly. Not really the kind of thing you have in mind when you picture the future. Everybody gets to fly it. I use this quote in the story, but William Gibson, the famous sci-fi novelist, has said, the future is already here. It's just not very evenly distributed. So if you're super rich and you have 10 minutes to spare, yeah, you could kind of fly around on something like a jetpack, but Maybe not what you have in mind.
Talking to Bill Andrews from Discover Magazine about the technology of the future that still hasn't made it today, stuff that's been in pop culture for years and years. Similar kind of issue here, the flying car. We've been thinking about this one for a long time. And maybe the problem with the flying car and the jetpack, the engineering isn't as easy as it seems like it should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. There's a reason why cars look like cars and planes look like planes, right? Because it's the most efficient design for that task. And whether it's a jetpack and how dangerous it would actually be to suddenly give some random guy off the street the power of flight, you know, would he make planes crash? Would he interrupt migrating birds? Who knows, right? And with cars, is it going to be as simple as, oh, let's just stick wings on a car and it'll take off? And, well, does that driver then need to have a FAA license? Do we need to figure out the gas mileage equivalent for the planes? Is it going to be super expensive? How does it really work? And while there are some examples, like we talked about the jetpacks, there's some kinds of working prototypes with flying cars too. So it's not like these are impossible. It isn't really as practical as you'd think. It's not as cool as, you know, the stories, the movies and books and everything make it out to be.
Yeah, maybe I'm too practical. I'm coming off a weekend where in the span of about 5 minutes, I saw two drivers cause a traffic jam in a store parking lot. And then I had to honk at someone who was coming over to my lane because they were looking at their cell phone and texting, mm-hmm. like touching stuff on it while driving. Do I want these same people flying vehicles filled with fuel, say, over my house?
Yeah, in three dimensions. It's tough enough to get around. And just think also people getting lost. It's easy enough to get lost on a 2D space, on the surface. Imagine the chaos if we opened up the skies to everybody.
And I want to move on to another one now. And this, the problem is maybe even more the boundaries of science. We've been writing about time travel for a long time. I know H.G. Wells and the Time Machine, there are probably ones before that. It's a staple of science fiction, books, movies, TV shows. As far as I know, we don't have time travel yet, right? Or maybe we do. We just haven't traveled. I don't know. But we don't have time machines. What are the stumbling blocks we're running into there?
Yeah, there, unfortunately, it isn't just a matter of finding the right engineering designs, finding something that works well enough to work. It's really something fundamentally just our universe doesn't seem to allow it. I mean, it seems like it should. It seems as if you can get in a car and travel a big distance in space. Why can't you get in some kind of vehicle and travel a distance in time? But unfortunately, that is just the way that our universe is built in a way. It's not like we can it's not like we have the means of doing anything like that. And even though some of the different sciences can, like the equations work backwards and forwards in time and a lot of physics and math and everything, that doesn't actually make it possible. So a lot of pop physics writers enjoy some celebrity talking about, oh, yes, how time travel would work if it were. That's great, but it doesn't actually mean anything for people, unfortunately. More's the pity.
Let's go to a caller at 800-642-1234. Vern is with us in Stanley. Vern, hi.
Oh, hi. Am I actually on the air?
You are on the air. What did you want to bring up, Vern?
Okay, I got a quick comment. For one, time does not exist. Two, you would have to use more energy than is available because as you go faster and faster, according to Einstein, you gain mass. So it would take an infinite amount of energy to drive a penny faster than the speed of light. We don't have an infinite amount of energy. But like I said, time does not exist. It's a convention. It's a sine wave.
Vern, thanks so much for the call. I'm actually reading a book about time right now, Bill, and there is that debate, the idea that, yeah, time is just this subjective thing we perceive. Mm-hmm. We don't need to get into that right now. But, yeah, that was the speed limit you were talking about. Vern says, hey, do the math. We don't have enough energy in the universe to break the light barrier.
Yeah, it's a pretty hard and fast rule. Einstein famously set down C, as scientists call the speed of light, as the kind of cosmic speed limit. And, yeah, according to Einsteinian physics, relativity, which, as far as we know, is correct, it would take an infinite amount of energy to accelerate anything past the speed of light. Of course, that isn't to say it's completely impossible. Warp speed is one of those ideas that I think at least we can't say for sure it's totally impossible. I do feel a little negative about time travel. Unfortunately, it does seem like that would be impossible, but there might still maybe be kind of shortcuts and workarounds to Einstein's theories that might make something like warp speed possible.
We'll get into warp speed more in just a bit, but briefly, Bill, do you have a favorite pop culture version of time travel?
I mean, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure was pretty great. I'm not going to lie. And not just because I'm a namesake of it, I guess. I don't think that was part of the decision in naming me. But it seemed so easy. You walk into a phone booth and you press a number and then you just zip and there you are in that time period. That seems great. And you could go back and talk with Socrates and Froude and all the other cats. But I don't know. That was a lot of fun. Not super realistic, but fun.
Talking to Bill Andrews from Discover Magazine, based in Waukesha, talking about the fantastic technology from pop culture, flying cars, time machines that still haven't happened. Maybe will never happen. You can join Bill and Rob's Excellent Adventure by calling 800-642-1234. Was there a future technology you were looking forward to that never happened? Maybe something from, I don't know, a cartoon, TV show, book that you read when you were a kid, and you're like, where is it? Where is that now? Food pills from the Jetsons? I don't know. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back maybe taking your calls coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about the technology of the future that still hasn't happened. Things like flying cars, warp speed, and jetpacks. Bill Andrews is with us, senior associate editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. He wrote Discover's piece, Whatever Happened to the Future? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Is there a technology you wish we had access to today? Something out of pop culture that you sometimes ask yourself, why don't we have that? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go back to our callers. Dave is with us in Winneconne. Dave, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call here. I want to know how we're doing on teleportation. I'm so sick of driving everywhere. I just want to be there. Now, such a waste of time.
I think that sometimes, too, you know, you're in that long road trip or something. Can't we just press the button and get there? Bill, that teleportation has been a pretty big one. Maybe not as all over the place as flying cars and pop culture. But Star Trek, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Star Trek, The Fly, notably, didn't turn out so well for us.
I don't want that
there.
Version.
Right. That isn't what anyone wants, I think. But, yeah, I mean, teleportation is a really interesting one because in quantum mechanics, which is the science of the really tiny stuff, particles of electrons and quarks and everything, it is actually possible to quantum teleport things, make matter disappear at one end and appear at the other end. And this is still very, very minute particles we're talking about. It probably isn't really going to scale up. We won't be able to teleport, you know, cars or ourselves around, but it's neat to think about. That's another one that I don't think we can shut the door on completely because the basics are there for individual little tiny things, and even though it's insanely more difficult to do it for big collections of matter like us, it's you can't say necessarily it's totally impossible. That's how I feel about that one right now.
Dave, thanks a lot for the call. And Bill, even if you could do it at something as large as a human scale, I would be a little worried about the whole fly issue or just, hey, we're really complicated things and you're telling me nothing is going to get shuffled around in the transition?
Yeah, there's so much room for error. I mean, I wouldn't want to go first. Let's put it that way.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We touched on a warp speed, Bill, and you said there are ideas that might allow for faster-than-light travel. It would take some funky physics, though, right?
Yes, definitely. Also the name of my high school band, by the way, Funky Physics.
Really?
But I was a nerdy kid, of course. Yeah, I mean, so in the story I mentioned, this Mexican physicist named Miguel Alcubierre, who is kind of the go. Everyone who looks into warp speed in real life will probably recognize that name, because he came up with a way to, like I mentioned earlier, kind of get around Einstein's rules and that absolute speed limit of the speed of light. And so Alcubierre's rules, his suggestions here is that if you are able to put kind of a bubble around the spaceship that you want to travel, a bubble of space-time itself, then you could manipulate that bubble to go faster than the speed of light, and it would be fine because you're not accelerating anything past that universal speed limit. It would be the part of the universe itself. And weirdly, that's okay. So that's a case where the equations work out. It seems like theoretically it should be possible, but to make it actually possible, you'd need all kinds of impossible technology. You need to figure out how to create something with negative mass, which is impossible. As far as we know, that doesn't actually really make sense. But if you could, then Miguel Alcubierre has it all figured out.
And then one more item you look at that this seems like the one we're closest to, having a virtual self or avatar that is exactly the way we'd want to be seen. So first of all, give us the pop culture parallels.
Oh, sure. I mean, if anyone has seen the recent movie Ready Player One, or if you've seen The Matrix, I mean, these are movies that incorporate avatars in centrally into their plot. And the idea just being that the real you, the physical version of your actual body, is one thing, but you can have this avatar, which is a version of you that can look however you want. Maybe it speaks a different way. Maybe it doesn't have an accent if you do. This avatar can be everything that you want it to be, and then that could be how the world sees you. No one would need to see if you have, you know, if you were a few pounds overweight or you have the haircut that you don't like. That wouldn't matter. If you've got these avatar technologies advanced enough, then the whole world would only interact with you the way you wanted it to.
And we have
kind of a nice idea.
We have hints of this. I mean, if you play an online game or if you are still out on Second Life or something, you're sitting there looking at a computer screen, but you've got an avatar that other people see on their screens. That's not quite the same thing, though.
Right, but that's the start. I mean, that's where the term avatar originally came from, the novel Snow Crash, where it started out in this culture in Snow Crash as the same thing, as people in their version of the internet had these avatar versions of themselves, and that's how everyone interacted. And even though in real life right now, it's not like you can tell people, your next-door neighbor, for example, yes, I'm really a snow elf, and my hair is blue, and you should address me as Thangnor the Wicked. That wouldn't really go over so well, but increasingly as these digital spaces become more real. You mentioned Second Life, World of Warcraft, the online RPG video game that is increasingly social. You know, in these digital spaces where people are already gathering, the avatar is already a totally, fully functioning idea. You only hang out with your digital friends the way that you want to with your avatar. And even if it's something as simple as the little picture next to your comment on a newspaper's, you know, comments section, that little picture is a form of an avatar too, because that's how the world sees you. And even though it's a smaller version of this idea of the full 3D hologram of you that others could react with and hang out with, it's still the same basic premise.
Talking to Bill Andrews from Discover Magazine about the technology of the future that never quite came along. Back to your calls. Dan is with us in Madison. Dan, hi.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call, and I'm going to have to dumb it up a little bit, but as soon as you mentioned pop culture, iconic stuff, I was thinking about the hoverboard in Back to the Future 2.
The hoverboard from Back to the Future 2. Dan, thanks for the call. Now, people have had these weird, funky boards, but they're not the hoverboard from Back to the Future 2, Bill.
Yeah, I mean, that is such an iconic idea. We talked about including that in this story, me and some of the other editors, but we thought since there's a recent product called the hoverboard, which does not hover, by the way,
right,
and apparently explodes kind of easily, and it has all of its own issues, we figured we'd just stay away from that, stick to some of the other tried and true ideas. But man, that movie made it look so great, this hoverboard, perfect balance. You could go over land, over rough terrain. Apparently, if you had power, you could go over water. It looks so much fun and so easy, and it saved Marty McFly's life a few times. Yeah, I agree, man. I wish we had real hoverboards.
We heard from a few people on Facebook. Tim writes, the technology he wishes we had was a time machine, hands down. Brandy says, flying pods, then we could have vertical lanes of traffic, cut down on traffic jams. Wayne says Star Trek transporter, so he doesn't have to deal with airline hassles. Bill, in our last few minutes, what is there one you would really be all over, you really wish that existed, and you would totally try it out?
Oh, those are very different questions. As much as I would love teleportation, I like I said, I don't think I would be the first to try it out.
True.
But if we did figure out warp speed, some way to travel faster than the light, I think that would be the most exciting to me. As a fan of sci-fi and space travel, knowing that we're limited to just kind of our nearest, not even stellar neighbors, just the nearest planets in a human lifetime, has always been a bit of a bummer to me. So I would love to see what lies beyond, see people travel out into the great beyond of the universe.
And Bill, I have a running, not even quite debate, with your colleague, Gemma Tarlak from Discover, regular guest on this show. She's super interested in, as she says on her blog, dead things, you know, mysteries from thousands or tens of thousands, millions of years ago. And I say, wouldn't it be great to have a time machine to go back and look and see what actually happened? She would rather, you know, use the archaeology and paleontology and use what we got now to try to figure out the mystery. Do you have a side on that fight?
I do not want to get on Gemma's bad side. I'll say that for sure. If I had a time machine, I would go into the future, straight up, and find out what the next video game systems are and how well we've cured all the diseases, and hopefully make sure that we're still around also while we're at it. That's what I would do with a time machine. You guys can debate the past.
All right.
And I'll stay on this side of Gemma.
You'll stay out of that debate. Bill, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I've had fun, too.
That's Bill Andrews, senior associate editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. He joined us today to talk about his article, Whatever Happened to the Future. He took a look at some of the technology that we all expected or hoped to have but didn't get, or at least not yet. You can still weigh in, by the way, with the technology you wish we had over on the Ideas Network Facebook page.